When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the first Take the Black live show of 2025. Take the Black, if you're just joining us, is a show where myself, Dan Selke, and Daniel Roman over there, and Scruffy the dog in the background. There he goes. I'll talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, swords, workplaces where your conscience is split into two, and whatever else comes up in our pop cultural radar. Hello, Martha. Hello, Robert. Hello, Julie. Hello, Nicole. Good to see everybody. As usual, we have a packed show for you, and we're going to have a packed year. Daniel,
yes.
We did our pre-recorded New Year's Day show about all the shows coming up in 2025, and there were a lot.
There were.
We're going to have a full buffet of commentary, insight, reviews and editorials and mouth talking for you this year, because there is a lot to watch. Daniel, if you were to name one show you're looking forward to most in 2025, what would it be?
Well, for people who maybe didn't see our 2025 most anticipated episode, which you can go watch now on YouTube, Spotify, wherever, it's the Wheel of Time. The Wheel of Time's coming back this year for season 3. There are a lot of shows I'm excited for. The Last of Us season 2, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, is coming. The Witcher is coming back. You can decide your level of excitement. I am curious more than excited for The Witcher season 4. What else? Andor's coming back. I know there are
Night of Seven Kingdoms.
That one, the Game of Thrones one, that we should remember on our Game of Thrones oriented podcast. Yes, new Game of Thrones show. So final season of Stranger Things. One Piece probably coming back for season 2 Wednesday. If you're into that, that's also coming back. Welcome to Derry. Okay. Alien Earth, which we forgot and left off of our anticipated list. I have a grudge against Alien Earth on premise, but I am going to watch it. I'm still very intrigued by it. So yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff. The Devil May Cry anime, which I am, to Dan's puzzlement, very excited about. So yeah, lots of stuff. Dan, if you had to name one show you are exceptionally enthused for, what would it be this year?
I'm with you on the Wheel of Time too, although I'll be honest, now that I've seen some of Severance, the Severance season 2 drops next week. I've seen a bit of it. So we're going to talk about it. Squid Game's coming in 2025 as well. It's a packed ass year, man.
True.
Hope you'll stick with us to go over all of it. But before we get into an early review of second season of Severance, which I've seen a bit of, it drops on Apple TV Plus next week. There's some breaking Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon news I thought was worth touching on up here at the top. Quick visit to Westeros.
Yeah.
The big one is probably there is a Game of Thrones video game coming out called Game of Thrones King's Road. And I chose a picture of a fake digital Olenna Tyrell for this because
it's just. You do not play Olenna Tyrell
in a video game trailer. There have been a few Game of Thrones video games over the years. None of them have ever really sparked. And I got to say, the trailer for this one does look impressive. It's an action game. You're going back around all the Seven Kingdoms. You're interacting with characters like Olenna and other people. There's voice acting. There looks like there's motion capture. There's action and adventure and politics and excitement. What's the big drawback about it, though, Dan?
Oh, man, I have such opinions about the big drawback. So the big drawback to this game is that it is a mobile game. So it is for your phone. You can apparently play it on Windows computers if you have... this like the Windows launcher, so I guess it like emulates it on your computer. It's not like a true computer version of the game. So, yeah, I mean, this game looks cool. Every time I see a trailer, I'm like, that looks interesting. It looks like an actual real Game of Thrones video game. Like, no shade at the Telltale games or any of the other ones, but
those are fun.
You know, like a big AAA video game release on the level of things like Assassin's Creed, The Witcher, stuff like that. It looks like that kind of game. But then you read the fine print and it is for mobile devices. So it's like, I don't. You know, I'm sure there are lots of people who enjoy gaming on their phone, but there's a reason those types of games are not typically on phones. You know what I mean? Like The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. You can't play it on your phone for very legitimate reasons, technical as well as like controls and stuff like that. So I don't, it's really tempering my excitement for this, because even though every time I look at trailers, like the gameplay trailer came out today and it looks pretty cool. But I can't imagine how it's going to be that good on a phone, you know?
I agree with you. Yeah. I feel the exact same way. It feels like if you want to make a big giant game, it feels like it should be played on a TV, and just something about it being on phones makes it feel small. As Leo says, a Grand Theft Auto game on a mobile device can work. It could work. I think I'm not sure the mass audience is quite ready to just accept playing a thing like that on your phone when the TV exists. So we'll see how that goes when it comes out, I think, later this year.
Yeah, and I think, so Leo says Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, he's played fully on mobile device. One kind of little thing I'll add to that is, if I remember right, San Andreas is an older one, right? So yeah. I think there's something to like emulating old games on a phone versus a new, like this is a new open world game, but you know, the fact that it's mobile means it can only be so ambitious to me, but that could be wrong.
It could. Maybe this will be the bridge.
This is definitely a game. I imagine at least one of us will be playing it just to see what the hell it's like when it comes out. So we'll definitely be talking about this year. It is slated to come out sometime in 2025. Doesn't have a release date yet. But it looks pretty cool. And you can play as multiple different classes. So like you can be a knight with a long sword. You can be a sellsword who fights in the style of wildlings. I'm assuming that's the axe thing we've seen in a lot of the trailers. Or you can be an assassin with daggers. And I assumed it was all just going to make... So in all the trailers, there's this one big beardy dude who you play, who is the bastard heir of House Tyr, which is apparently a new house they made up in the north for this game. It seemed like that was going to be the main dude, but I did see in this new trailer that came out today that the assassin class, it looked like a woman, like kind of modeled after Arya Stark. So it does look like there's going to be some variation in who you actually play as, depending on what class you pick, or maybe you get to pick a character model. So yeah. As Robert Harris says, mobile games earn money and prompt you to spend. It's all about the dollars. And that doesn't make me more excited, Robert Harris, even though you're right. You know, phone games do love their microtransactions. And we don't know anything about whether this game will have microtransactions, you know, like pay $5 to get a cloak that looks like Jon Snow's or something. I'm sure it will. But that's something we haven't heard anything about yet. So
I'd put money down on it. But yeah, that's happening.
Get the Angel Reese special at McDonald's now. Let's break it down. My favorite barbecue sauce, American cheese, crispy bacon, pickles, onions, and a sesame seed bun, of course. And don't forget the fries and a drink. Sound good?
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating restaurants for a limited time.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices. Save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas mini bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Another quick Game of Thrones thing is, were you at all surprised that House of the Dragon, the Game of Thrones prequel series currently in its second season, going into its third, was the most pirated TV show of 2024?
I was not really surprised by that. I mean, Game of Thrones was for most of its run, I think, the most pirated show each year. And I think House of the Dragon, you know, we like to bitch about House of the Dragon on here because we're book purists. But also, like, there were some issues with season two. There were also some really exceptional episodes in season two. Ooh. I think The Red Dragon and the Gold is still arguably the best episode of fantasy TV.
Yesterday, I was in a Starbucks just working, and I randomly saw a dude on his laptop watching The Red Dragon and the Gold, just drinking his coffee doing it. I'm like, that is a good sign.
Respect. Yeah, and it was a really excellent episode. I think House of the Dragon had some really high peaks in its second season, even if it didn't quite pull it all together exactly the way that especially a lot of book fans, but in general, I think fans really wanted. I think the finale let people down, but I'm not surprised it was the most pirated show of 2024. I mean, what would have knocked it from that pedestal?
Yeah, that is the other question. I'm not sure what would have been the more obvious thing to knock it off. I'm pleased. I'm happy. The hype is still there. All these years later, it's still there. Hope it keeps continuing. We'll see how Night of the Seven Kingdoms keeps it up or does not. This year, what would have knocked it off? If anything's going to knock it off the pirate scale, what would it have been? Shogun? No, Shogun was too classy. Or just not as well known enough. Like not the Rings of Power.
I mean, like that. Rings of Power, I think, wasn't even on the list, if I remember right. One of our freelancers wrote about this most pirated show of 2024 thing, and I'm pretty sure he pointed out that there were a lot of other shows on there, like The Penguin was one that was up there too,
like, I think. Fallout, maybe Fallout. I think The Boys was second.
Yeah, but The Rings of Power didn't even make the list for most pirated. I think part of that though is Rings of Power is very widely available globally, compared to Max originals, like the UK, I don't think streams Max the same way, whereas Amazon Prime is just freaking everywhere. So that's probably a factor in why like HBO shows tend to pop up on these pirate lists.
Yeah,
more true than say Amazon Prime, where it's, you know, you can get it in most countries at this point. Jeff Bezos is everywhere. Whether
if you're paying for same day delivery, you can pay for Fallout.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Okay. Although I will say, looking at those shows this year, it is really big. There's a lot of really high profile things coming, which is exciting. One more Game of Thrones thing. Julie has a comment about Game of Thrones being able to look at the Emmys. Speaking of award shows, House of the Dragon star Emma Darcy was up for best female actor in a drama, I think is the category. And they didn't win. I think Anna Sawai of Shogun won. Can't really argue that.
Can.
She was great.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy this kind of a Alexander McQueen weird, roughly penguin suit thing they're wearing. I think they compared it to like a child musical prodigy vibes, which I take. So I like that.
Yeah, looking great. Looking great.
I always like what they wear. They have really cool fashion sense. And I like when a celebrity uses their platform to wear crazy stuff.
To look
Gwendolyn
fast.
Christie always wore cool stuff on red carpets.
That is true. Gwendolyn Christie always went very hard for award shows. That comment from Julie about House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones. I mean, Game of Thrones, I think, held the record for the most Emmys until basically Shogun knocked it for the most in 1 year. I think Shogun beat it, but I think it still has the record for the most Emmys a series ever got. But I do think the actors are kind of overlooked.
Yes, very true. Shows.
I think that is one category where, you know, Peter Dinklage got it a few times because, he was just such a standout performance. It's hard to argue with it. I think part of the reason for that is that shows like House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones have such big sprawling casts that even if actors are doing an incredible job, it's a little different than something like Shogun, which really had three leads, and like Anna Sawai had a ton of screen time to show a whole bunch of different ranges to her character. And she also spoke in Japanese and English. That's a whole other thing for how she was able to do that role. But I do think that's something that works against a show like Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon, that they have so many actors. Yeah. A lot of them aren't even eligible for best actor or actress. They have to go in the supporting category, like Peter Dinklage. I'm pretty sure won for best supporting because most of the actors don't get the literal amount of screen time they need to even qualify because there are so many characters and plot lines. So I hope we see that shift though, because they obviously deserve the bells and whistles.
It'll put in season three. I agree with JP that Tom Glenn Carney should have served for recognition as Aegon. He was, to me, he was the best performer in that past season. He was really, really good.
Yeah.
But
disrespected just like Viserys before him, like father, like son, neither got their award creds.
He's used to it.
Yeah.
Let's move on. So, the second season of Severance. I'm not sure how many of you folks have seen it out there. If you haven't, if you can, I recommend it. It's an Apple TV Plus show, which means that the potential audience is automatically like cut by 2/3 because it's just that streaming service that not a lot of people have. But this show is great. It's produced by Ben Stiller and also a less famous producer person who isn't an actor. And it's a sci-fi show about what if when you went into work, your consciousness was severed and you had no memory of what you did at work when you were at home and vice versa. Mm-hmm. It is funny. It's creepy. It's got a lot of characters seems to really care about. And it's coming back next Friday. And I've got to watch the season in advance. I haven't actually watched the full thing. I got screened a little bit late. So I've watched the first 2 of 10 episodes.
Nice.
But you know what? I think that's enough to weigh in on it. By the way, I think it had 9 episodes the first season, and now it has 10 this time, which is nice because it feels like we usually get less as TV shows go on. So I like that we're getting a little bit of a blow up this year.
Agree. I think that's nice to see that Severance is getting a little more time. So what did you think of it? One of the things I saw in a review was that one of the few criticisms I've seen was that it is too out there and weird. They got too long of a leash this season because of how well received season one is. Do you agree with that, or do you think it's still?
First of all, I will say the reception in general seems to be rapturous. Like people are really digging it. It's got like very, very high scores, and I agree. I've only watched the first two. The first two are very much like a set of episodes. They kind of are a reset from the finale and kind of have a new normal going forward.
Okay.
Everything I liked about it is there. The second season of Squid Game, I felt sort of suffered. It felt a little repetitive and it kind of didn't like push the story I love from the first one forward enough, I thought. The second season of Severance, it's got everything I loved about it. It's got the humor, the kind of the uncanniness. It's a great looking show. Those like stark white hallways are so iconic and cool and uncanny and creepy. I just love it. The kind of the way they all talk, the things they come up with for Lumen Industries, the company that's doing all this, that's behind everything, behind the mysteries, the kind of out of touch, bizarre corporate speak way they communicate is so at once funny, but also familiar enough to be unsettling and frustrating. They do a really good job of that. And these first two episodes kind of, again, just reestablish things, catch up with the characters. They make really good use. It's smart writing choices of kind of the first one is entirely in the basement and we don't have the outies who would be people who, you know, who live on the outside at all, which is so smart dramatically because the innies are being lied to like 24/7, but we have no access to information outside of that. So we're kind of just as confused as them, which I really like. I feel like in a mystery box show like this, mystery box show being a TV show that's kind of driven by figuring out what's happening, like Lost, like what's the mystery behind it? After a while, you can kind of start to get frustrated with people not figuring it out.
Sure.
And Severance is a really good built-in excuse, because how can the Innies figure anything out? They are literally cut off from anything going on outside. So any little push, any little step forward they take feels really big. There are a lot of new mysteries. A lot of questions are answered. I don't think it gets too weird. Not yet. I haven't thought that. I do feel it expanding. You can feel like in the first season, we didn't get to know. I hope this isn't a spoiler. We only saw, I think, Adam Scott's character, Mark, when he's both in Lumen and outside. But we didn't see the outside lives of any of the other characters until like the very end. In this season, we actually explore them more. So we're going to be hanging out with the innies and outies on both sides of it. There are new characters brought in. Everything is great. So far, I'm very, very happy with it. I want to watch more pretty badly.
Nice. Yeah, I think Helly maybe was the only other one we really got a little bit of a feel for.
Really briefly outside. At the end. And like, and it was only like through her innies viewing of the weird tape she made.
So that's cool. That's all really exciting. I mean, Severance was the first season was a great show. My excitement is kind of mid, but that is solely because I watched season one when it came out. So I haven't rewatched. So it's not even, and I'm not excited for Severance. It's just my excitement hasn't fully kicked in yet because it's been so long, which is kind of one of the dangers of our current era of streaming TV, where it's like, this was a 3-year break between season one and season two. That's the length of time that was like between Star Wars movies in George Lucas's prequel trilogy, you know? I'm definitely psyched for Severance. It premieres on January 17th.
Next Friday.
Apple TV Plus, man, it really has.
They have good stuff.
They have a lot of good stuff. I feel like their brand identity as a streamer is kind of the opposite almost of something like Netflix, where Netflix is like making tons of, they're green lighting tons of stuff, throwing spaghetti at the wall, and they're going to cancel 3/4 of it. Apple TV, it feels like they're really being very intentional with the, we're going to make, and it's almost a little older leaning too, a lot of their content. They're making thought-provoking, well-made shows, and Severance is kind of the epitome of that, because it's a cool idea, this idea of severing the work mind from the out of work mind. Like, who among us hasn't thought that at some job or other over the years, you know, like wishing you could skip fast forward through work or whatever. So it's a cool concept, cool show.
I know Dan Erickson is the name of the showrunner on it. I just realized he told a story about he was inspired to make the show because he worked at a door factory after graduation. And he hated it so much he wanted to skip it. And there is a scene in the season of Severance where someone goes to interview at a door factory. Let's put it together in my head.
Yeah.
What a fun little thing. Victor is worried that things might get bloated and stretched out because they were a hit show and they want everything to be more. It doesn't really happen these days, though, does it?
Look at 10 years ago when shows had like 20 episodes. I don't think we're in too much of a danger of that now.
It depends. Like, there are a lot of these kind of high profile glossy shows where that literally just can't happen. Like, Squid Game is the biggest show to ever hit Netflix, and it's going to have this second season and a third, and it's over, which I do respect. Hopefully
until they make spinoffs, which you know they're
spinoffs. That is the way you bloat these days. Like, Severance has one second season 3 years later. The Wheel of Time has this third season and over 2 years after. Like, the really high profile ones they really can't afford to go just make it forever and ever and ever, or it seems like they can't. They do the spinoffs, though. That is the thing that happens. Like, Interview with the Vampire already has two spinoffs. The Boys is a spinoff and maybe another one on the way. And there's like a Mexican language one on the way coming. So that happens. But these base shows themselves, I don't know. I haven't really felt, usually the complaint has been that it doesn't go long enough.
I think the spinoff thing is the biggest way that we're seeing what that looks like in our current era. Shows that are getting spinoffs before it's kind of justifiable, partially as a way to fill the gaps between these long season waits.
Totally.
You know, the Witcher is kind of the classic case study of this, where they did like one season and then a spinoff movie and then another season and a spinoff prequel that was like really bad. And then they have another spinoff. They canceled yet another spinoff after they filmed part of it, the Rats one. So I think that is a danger of Shadow and Bone was like that too. They pulled away a big part of their creative team to work on a spinoff for after season two. And the spinoff people really wanted, because it was Six of Crows, which is the most popular book in that entire kind of saga. But they pulled people away to work on it instead of season two, and season two wasn't well received, and then they canceled it. So yeah, I do think that the spinoff thing is a definite danger right now, more so than
like Star Wars, like all those shows. Like Star Wars would be rolling in praise if it had only made The Mandalorian and Andor. Instead, they made like these 30 other shows in addition to that, and it just feels like a fire hose. We don't have the ability to drink fast enough. But yeah, I agree. What?
Oh, Victor, are you talking about Squid Game? So Victor in the chat, for audio listeners, people not listening live, said, I'm just saying this was a great one-season show, and now it's going to go for three more years until we get to the resolution. Penguin and Shogun show how strong a show can be when it tells the story in one go rather than stretching it out. And that is fair. You know, both of those were limited series. To be fair, they were both purposely telling a one season story, and we've had those for a while, but these were really good ones. I think that fear with Shogun, totally fair. They're making potentially two more seasons of Shogun, and there's been some rumbles that they're having a little bit of a hard time figuring out maybe exactly what they're going to do. Okay, so Victor said this actually applies to both Squid Game and Severance. Fully agree on Squid Game. That was also kind of designed as a one season show. Then Netflix was like, look, maybe we could make more out of this. I don't know if I agree about Severance, though. What do you think, Dan?
I think it depends on what they do with it. Like, having seen Squid Game season two, I'm not sure they're making the most of the opportunity to make a second season. But having seen Severance season two, I think they are. I think it depends on what you do with the chance you're given.
Yeah.
It's not like Squid Game and Severance were like Shogun, which concludes and it's like, oh, that's an ending. Like, they both ended on sort of cliffhangers. Like, there's more you could do. And but you could have also ended it, well, especially with, you could have ended with Squid Game, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think one is faring better than the other, because one has made better new episodes than the other.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Squid Game, so I can't remember where I read this, but basically the showrunner, creator of Squid Game, he made very little money on the first season of that show. He'd been trying to get it made for years. He had this very clear idea of it, and it was a one-off type of story. But then it made Netflix so much money, but not him, that he basically signed on to two more seasons because he had kind of gotten screwed. So he's got a better contract, I think, for seasons two and three.
I hope it makes money. I do have to say, though, does that make sense dystopia. To you? Like, how what? Does Squid Game ends with the guy with dumb red hair saying, I'm going to come find you?
Well, yeah, it ends with someone who won the Squid Game, won the contest, who would have gone off to just go live a life, deciding, now I'm going to find some way to get back at you for doing this terrible thing. It's one of those, I feel like we're very used to in our day and age, nice tied up with a bow endings. I think there's something to be said for an ending that is fairly open-ended, that leaves viewers thinking about what could have happened next, but doesn't need to actually show it. I would have been satisfied without more Squid Game. But I enjoyed the second season, so I don't think that they're really having the stretch it out problem so much.
Speaking of a show that I don't think either of us thinks is being stretched out unnecessarily, HBO dropped a little teaser trailer for the second season of The Last of Us. It's zombie apocalypse drama that debuted to much fanfare back in 2020, whatever, three, right? Yeah. It's coming back this April. They dropped a little new teaser showing a new character who is sure to shake things up. It's like a minute long. If we would watch it and we both played the game, we could comment on it a little bit. I liked The Last of Us. It was good. I mean, that episode about the gay guys was easily the best one they had. Like, so much that it kind of made the rest of it look like crap.
I think you're totally wrong about that. I think that was one of the best ones, but episode 5 for me had it all. It had a moving interpersonal story with the two brothers. It had the zombies, which was kind of one thing that the later part of The Last of Us was missing. It didn't really have that. And it had stuff with Joel and Ellie, and it had a huge traumatic twist at the end. So agree to disagree.
It was good, but the third one was like this giant epic panorama. God, it was so good. But you know what? It's good to have something to aim for. Okay, Richard, please roll the trailer.
Yes.
And I think we all know, the second Last of Us game was very controversial when it came out.
Yes.
I don't think it'll be as controversial because we already know what happens, but it's controversial because of this woman.
Can you pause? Pause right on her. Yeah, so I agree with you. The Last of Us Part 2 was, for people who don't know who aren't into games, famously controversial game for reasons we can't fully discuss because it would be too much of spoilers. Yeah. So I agree with you. I don't think it will be as controversial, partially because it's television. I think part of the reason the game was so controversial, aside from just the can of worms of how video game fans have their own types of toxicity and respond to changes in properties that they love, little bit different than TV. I think that also there were some things with playing different characters people didn't like, and you're not going to get that in a television show necessarily the same
way.
So this character here, for people who've played, this young woman's name is Abby. We're going to be seeing a lot of Abby in the third season or in the second season, probably beyond that as well, without getting into
spoilers.
There are
two more seasons on tap that they're going to use to adapt this second game.
Yes, it's a big sprawling game. I'm a little nervous that this season's only 7 episodes. I wish it was longer, but I do think splitting the second game into 2 seasons probably makes sense. So I think that's probably fair. But yeah, so get used to this person's face. That's Caitlin Dever playing Abby. We're going to be seeing a lot of her.
Yeah, there's no way. Richard, please keep it going. There's no way it's going to be as got banned. It was famously a freak out, though. People were upset. It was COVID times. We were all inside. Yeah. We were mad.
Oh, pause on Jeffrey right back there. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you're totally right. It was COVID. So part of it was a, you know, perfect storm of things coming out at a time when people were cooped up. They wanted it to be one thing and it was something else. But I will say they hired extra security for the actress who plays Abby in the show.
Crazy.
Abby, the woman who played Abby in the video games, is this really famous voice actress named Laura Bailey. She got like death threats and stuff, like people threatening her kids and stuff. Like, it was really, really bad and ugly. So hopefully the show doesn't have the same issues. This guy, do you want to say anything about this guy? Because I'm excited to see him in this show.
Yeah, I mean, Jeffrey Wright's a great actor. You know, Westworld, Innocent America. I think he plays the same role in the show that he voiced in the game. Like, yes. The Last of Us is uncommonly faithful to its source material because Neil Druckmann, the guy who made the games, is also working on the TV show. So there is a level of fidelity that's more or less unmatched when it comes to a TV adaptation of pretty much anything.
Yeah, I agree.
I hope it's a success because I think more TV shows and movies could stand to adapt things a little closer. So yes. I hope this goes over nicely.
Yeah, totally. And I was psyched to see Jeffrey Wright back in the same part. He plays Isaac, who's the leader of this militant group, basically. And yeah, as Robert Harris says in the comments, love Jeffrey Wright. Dude is such a good actor. Yes, he is.
Yeah,
shall we carry on?
Yeah, I'll work it. Pretty short teaser. Oh, but people on fire in this game? That's wild. There's running, there's lesbians, there's mountains full of snow. It's got everything you want.
Yeah.
And of course, zombies. And of course, Pedro Pascal in his like one of three enormous roles he's taking on this year.
Yes.
And they even like have the season 2, but it's a Roman numeral, not a number. That's how you know it's important.
Faithful.
Coming in April.
Yeah.
Faithful part of me wants to say faithful to a fault, but I haven't really seen much in the way of faults yet. So I hope this show is a case in point of the value of faithfulness, because yeah, it's going to be very, very faithful.
Well, I think the nice thing about The Last of Us, so as you said, it does have Neil Druckmann as one of the showrunners. He's also the dude who created the game for Naughty Dog. But they haven't been so married to the source material that they're afraid to change things up. And totally that episode not. You mentioned that you and so many people really loved a long, long time, the one with Bill and Frank, the gay love odyssey over the course of decades. That is one that was pretty much created for the show. Like, Bill and Frank are very, very different in the game. You don't ever even meet Frank. You just see Bill after Frank is gone, and they basically like had a bad breakup, and Frank ended up like getting bit and hanging himself. It's a whole completely different story, but the show was willing to change it. So I think that it's interesting because The Last of Us is very faithful. Like, on the other side of that, there was that episode Left Behind about Ellie and her like childhood first love in the mall. That one is like ridiculously faithful to the game. Whereas the Bill and Frank episode was mostly new. And I think The Last of Us is doing so well because it's not afraid to take big swings and change things, but it's still very rooted in what the story is. It's not changing things just for the hell of it. It's only if it seems like it will be better for television. I think that's awesome.
What it doesn't do is the thing that you kind of feel other adaptations do sometime, which is adapt the original story, but then overlay it with ideas that are not part of that narrative, that kind of seem that they've come from outside the source. Like, yes, The Last of Us added new things, but it was still extremely in keeping with what was there, and it didn't affect anything that was there.
You mean like Damon's Paradise Lost storyline in House of the Dragon season 2?
Or Allison and Rhaenyra being besties in House of Dragons season 2. Yes, those things.
Fair. That's super fair. And I mean, part of that is probably that Druckmann is involved. It's him and Craig Mazin,
who
Craig Mazin, longtime fan of these games, was trying to get it made for years before this even. I think this is going to be, you know, one of those shows that's on every top fantasy sci-fi show of the year list by the end of the year, I think. Unless they really screw the pooch, I can't imagine that it's not going to be good.
I have a hard time believing they'll screw the pooch.
Me too.
Or even molest the pooch. Like, just like, I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I think the pooch is safe. Everyone on the show might not be safe. There are going to be some episodes that really push audiences in this season. I think it's going to have at least one that is going to really get people talking. There is one thing I think is interesting. So there is a very clear split in the video game where basically like the perspective kind of shifts around halfway through the video game. There's one scene in this trailer that shows Abby in front of a grave. Now, we don't want to talk about whose grave that is or anything like that, because I don't know how they're going to handle these spoilers. But that is from the back half of the game, if I remember right. So it makes me wonder how they're not going to adhere strictly to the same split that they did in the game. I think they're going to shuffle things around a little bit, which I would be fine with.
Yeah. Again, I'm sure that they'll have a plan. I expect it'll be a good plan. Valerie asked if there's a third game. They've been rumored that for a long time, and nothing's been officially announced.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what'll happen after season 3. It'd be kind of fun if they decided that the story would continue in TV form rather than video game form, like TV beats it to it. But we'll see. Right now, part 2, that's for TV. That'll take two seasons, and then we'll see what happens after. What, if anything, happens after that.
Yeah, I think with the third game, I seem to recall Neil Druckmann saying he'd figured out what the third game would be. But they've been like keeping super quiet about it. And I know that they went through a little bit of upheaval, Naughty Dog, in the past year or two. They were working on a multiplayer Last of Us game that they years of work into, and then they scrapped it. And then there were layoffs because the video game industry, every major company is going through layoffs in the past couple of years. So, we'll see what happens. But I would be excited, video game, TV, however they do it, to see more of that story, because I think The Last of Us Part 2 does leave off in such a way, even though it's a very full story. Like, they don't need more. But I would love it if they did another one.
Now, see, that, unlike Squid Game Season 1, that is an ending where, yeah, like, you could do more, but it does have a sense of finality. But yes. Not to harp on this, but I'm sorry. Like, ending on a red-haired man saying, like, I'm going to find you, and then click ending. That's not a, that's a place to leave it. Ending,
yes.
In my opinion.
Yeah, totally. Robert Harris says, how would they have had time to do Intergalactic and The Last of Us 3? For those who might not know, Intergalactic is the newer game from Naughty Dog that's coming out that premiered its first trailer at the Game Awards. It's like a sci-fi game. Looks really, really cool. I imagine Intergalactic was done first. I imagine they hadn't started any work on The Last of Us Part 3 until after Intergalactic. But we'll see what they say whenever they say anything about it, if they ever say anything about it.
I know we got to move on, but I do want to point out, by the way, I think JPS, how many episodes? It's 7 this season, which is a little low, but hopefully that's most of it.
Just like Squid Game.
Just like Squid Game. Although it really, it does help that Squid Game season 3 is going to come out like potentially within a matter of months, like not it even does. A full year.
Yeah.
That almost makes it feel like not so much two seasons, but like a long break between season halves, which does make a difference.
which, to be fair, that's what a lot of TV networks used to do, like AMC and Outlander, not the latest season of Outlander, but the first couple used to do that as a regular thing. They would do like a five or six month break between season 1A and season 1B. So yeah, you're right. Squid Game does feel more like that than like a true, it's done and now we're coming back. And he wrote it as one season and then it became too big to tenably release it. So
I'd be more mad if I had to wait another two damn years, see what happens next.
Totally agree.
Okay, my last thought was that what if they did continue The Last of Us after season 3 and just keep going and not make another game? Because Neil Druckmann is one of those guys who you play his games kind of like Hideo Kojima and you're like, oh, what you want to really be doing is making movies, don't you?
Yeah. I think that would be interesting. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to that if they did it, as long as he was attached. I think that the danger there, I don't think this would happen. I think if it was going to go forward, it would be because he wanted it to go forward and he wanted to do it on TV.
Of course.
But if with most networks, if they were to do an announcement like that, my initial reaction would be, oh, God, no, because I'd worry they were going to have some different creative force behind it and there's a company mandate and whatever. But I do think if The Last of Us season 4, because it would be season 4, goes past the video games that we have out right now, it'll be because he wants to. So I would be on board with that. I'd want to see what he has planned next.
And Robert is right. Gamers would hate that, which would be pretty funny. So personally, I am kind of in favor of that.
Gamers do love to hate things. So
loud about it. It's great. It's the best, man.
So they would hate that. But we'll see what happens. I think if the show goes farther, it will be because it deserves to go farther. So,
yeah, we're not even there yet. Just thinking out loud. Daniel, anybody listening, watching, what are you watching? What'd you watch over the holidays? Because we haven't seen each other in this show for a while.
It's true. We haven't, man. I have been watching, reading, doing a ton. So bear with me as I go down the list. I finally started watching For All Mankind show, which you've said is really good. Some other people have recommended. Apple TV Plus had this like free promotion weekend.
Right.
I already had Apple TV Plus because Silo's on and I've been watching Silo, but people were throwing around a lot of recommendations on Blue Sky when that happened and someone recommended For All Mankind. And we started it and we're most of the way through season 2, really enjoying it. That show definitely has its hooks in me. Really, really cool show. Beyond that, still watching Silo. It's got 2 episodes left. I have seen them. I think that the season ends really well. I know I saw someone in the chat, I think it was Nicole, saying had slowed down on liking Silo a little bit partway through the season. I have not read the book, so I'm still loving Silo season 2. I have not really had many issues with it, honestly. But I think the final two episodes are really outstanding. So I'm curious to see what people think.
Yeah, I know you've been loving it. I did look into it, and I saw that fans are not actually on your full joy train. A lot of fans do think this is a weaker season than the first. But you're the one watching it, not me. So
yeah, I mean, it's tricky because Robert Harris says, I've read Wool and the show is just not it. And I have not read Wool. I would not be surprised if this season is very different. So it basically, Rebecca Ferguson's character, Juliet, is off in a different silo for pretty much the whole, like, this is not a spoiler. She's there all season. We're on episode 8. She's been there the entire time so far. The cast is a little split up because of that. And I don't know how the perspective works in the book, but because of that, we're getting a lot of characters in the original silo because they need to still show what's going on there. And I assume not all of them are covered the same way in the book. But I think in terms of like the way the television show is going, like I've really enjoyed watching it. I think the actors are all like doing an incredible job. I think the writing and the storytelling has been rock solid. I think that some of the like engineering problem solving scenes that Juliet has have been really, really cool. She got the bends in this last episode, which is this scuba. Do you know? So it's a thing in scuba diving where if you go deep and then you come up to, you know what the bends is. Yeah. Well, listeners, look up what the bends is if you don't know. I thought they were just going to skim that. They kind of warned the bends is a danger. And then they ended the episode. It seemed like she didn't get it. And then she gets it at the start of the next episode and has to solve that. So the
sneaky bends.
JP says Silo has some weak acting at parts and episodic writing is not the best. I agree to disagree. Unless the weak acting you're talking about is Common, I don't know who you mean. Because Common is kind of the one actor on that show who's the odd man out. But yeah.
I agree with Leo. Still watching Skeleton Crew. It's enjoyable, but no masterpiece. A guilty pleasure for not only next week. You said it all. I don't even want to talk about it that much. It's cute. It's nice. It is probably in the upper half of Star Wars shows they've made. I haven't done an accounting of that, but I'm going to go ahead and say probably.
I would agree with that because I think that Skeleton Crew's big strength is it knows what it is. It's not trying to pretend to be some big sweeping epic. Like it's a story about a bunch of kids going on an adventure and then finding out that adventure was more dangerous than they thought it would be. And it's really fun for that. And it's very piratey. So yeah, I haven't been enjoying Skeleton Crew too. I was a little lukewarm on it at first, but it's one of those shows where it's like, I'm not really going to rip this show apart because like it's kind of geared toward kids. I am not a kid. And I think it's doing what it set out to very well. So Skeleton Crew, one more next week. I watched the Wicked movie last night, which I enjoyed.
Oh, has something changed within you? Is something not the same?
Yes. I am defying gravity coming on this podcast today because gravity wanted to keep me in bed. But no, yeah, it was really good. I was a little lukewarm on Ariana Grande at the start of the movie. I won't lie.
Go to hell. Okay.
Kirsten Chenoweth is just big shoes to fill. That's who played Glinda on the Broadway for people listening and whatever. And she just has a lot of sass, and Ariana Grande does not have the sass. But I think like the writing for the comedic beats was so good that I forgot about it after 20 minutes into the movie. I enjoyed it a lot. Cynthia Erivo was amazing. So yeah, it was a good time. I'm glad that that's another one we won't be waiting like 5 years for the sequel to, because it's coming out this year, right?
Yeah, probably around the same time. Yeah, I loved it. Julie's watching Outlander and Landman. Landman's caught on a big way. And I think Outlander has its finale this Friday. We'll be covering it here on winterscoming.net.com.
Yeah.
Happy for that. I watched Nosferatu. Went to the theater to see that.
How was it?
Good to go see. It was good. I like the original. I've watched a couple of times. And the new one is just bigger, meatier. Pretty freaky. I like Bill Skarsgård's like a 18 octave lower voice, how it kind of rumbled in the stomach whenever we talked. That was fun.
Nice.
The look of it's great. The mood of it was great. It was a mood piece. It's a vibes forward piece, which is perfectly fine with me. You go in, you kind of let it wash, this kind of gothic horror wash over you, and you just sit Transfixed, and I totally enjoyed it. Cool. I'm into it, and I think what's the director's name?
Robert Eggers.
There you go. Hasn't really missed yet. So kudos on that.
Agree. I'm glad to see
Lily Rose Depp bounce back after The Idol.
Oh man, you hated that show. I hated that show. I hated it so much I didn't even watch it.
I hated it.
What else have you been watching? Anything else you want to cut out?
With Leo, Creature Commando still put me through week to week, loving so far for the finale. That has been a cute little show. I caught up with that a couple of weeks ago, and I'm like, oh, this isn't bad. It's very James Gunn, which is he's obsessed with these kind of outcast misfit freaks. That's the characters he loves.
Yep.
And it's at its best when it's focusing on those and how pitiful and sympathetic they are. But it does kind of have a sense of humor to it that I think I would like even more if I were 17. But it comes from a good place. It comes from like a warm, fuzzy place, and then it's gross and vulgar. I like it.
That's fun. I'm glad that that's going well. That's the first official DCEU project. But it really feels more like an extension of what Gunn was already doing in the DCU with like the Suicide Squad. So, I haven't watched that yet, but I've been hearing good things, and
totally cute.
You've been saying it's really good. So glad that's catching on.
Yeah, I like it. I'm looking forward to the finale. It's this Thursday. All right. And finally, let's go into our week news.
I got to shout out some books. Is that okay?
Okay, fine. Yeah,
two quick books that I'm reading that I'm enjoying a lot, that I'm reading them at least as much as I'm watching TV. One is Ambessa, Chosen of the Wolf. This is the Arcane tie-in novel from C.L. Clarke. It comes out in February. This is really cool. If people liked Arcane and wanted to know more about like Ambessa, who's one of the main villains, her history and how she and her daughter ended up at odds, you probably are going to want to read this. And C.L. Clarke is kind of the perfect person for it to be writing it. The other one that I picked up this week is Death of the Author by Nnedi Okorafor. This comes out, I think it's next week, but my Barnes & Noble had it out early. This is like a really trippy meta type of novel about this disabled African-American woman who writes a sci-fi novel, and then it takes off and it really gets into like blurring lines of reality. And it's a very interesting book so far. I'm enjoying it a lot, but it's definitely one that I'm like, I'm going to take my time reading it and savor it. It's not one to binge read. So yeah, those are the two books I'm into right now too.
Sweet. All right. Let's move on to the WIC News Lightning Round, where we go through a bunch of stories we couldn't get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second takes on them.
Yes.
These are ordered. So you ask me first, I mean, roughly, and then I will ask you the even numbered ones.
Nice. Okay, I'm here for it. So speaking of the DCEU, Jason Momoa is going to play Lobo in the new Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow movie.
Yeah, Lobo is like a intergalactic hog riding bad boy rock and roll bounty hunter, which just pictures Momoa next to that, and I think you can sense it's probably decent cast, and I can imagine him having fun with something like that.
Totally.
And having with Millie Alcock, who was in House of the Dragon, kind of like a weird Game of Thrones House of the Dragon crossover. Sounds fun. Daniel, this came out during the long break. Christopher Nolan, director of Interstellar, Oppenheimer, etc., is adapting The Odyssey by Homer as his next movie. You want to see that?
Christopher Nolan meets Homer. Sign me up. Yeah, of course I'm going to see that. I love me some Greek myth. I love me the Odyssey. I love me Christopher Nolan. I'm totally on board for this. I think it's got Matt Damon as Odysseus, maybe.
I think you're right.
Tom Holland's in it. I think Zendaya's in it. So it's got a good cast. Nolan always has good casts. Hell yeah. The Odyssey. All right. This is a rumor mill time. Lucasfilm is apparently working on a Knights of the Old Republic television show.
Knights of the Old Republic is a, I think it started as like a series of video games at like 4,000 mm-hmm. years before Star Wars, where there's tons of Jedi, tons of Sith, they're fighting all over the place. It's a rumor, and every Star Wars announcement should be treated with skepticism. Take a lot of grains of salt because they can't seem to get anything new made. But why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Go ahead. Daniel, we alluded to this a little earlier. The second season of Shogun was announced, but apparently there might be some issues with it. What's happening there?
Yeah, so they renewed Shogun for seasons 2 and 3. The writers and creators have been in the writer's room trying to figure out what that would look like because they did the whole book already. Variety wrote an article about this recently, and they kept referring to it as potential new seasons of Shogun, and then were sure to emphasize that FX had not given it a formal renewal yet. So it sounds like it's not 100% set in stone, even though it sounded like it was previously. So we'll see what happens. They have 6 weeks left writing that. Okay. Oh, this is interesting. Apparently, there was an attempt to make a Wicked movie in the 90s with Demi Moore as Elphaba.
That sounds fun. This would have been before the musical. So this would have been like a movie based on the book by that guy, which is no singing, no dancing, but lots of drama. Gregory Maguire, yeah. I would watch that. And Demi Moore just won a Golden Globe for a performance in The Substance, which I still have to watch. And I'm going to watch soon because I hear it's great. It would have been cool.
Yeah.
But it worked out pretty nicely, too. So I'm fine with either way. Daniel, a new movie called In the Lost Lands is coming to theaters on March 7th, according to George R. R. Martin's blog. It's pretty right on there. What's yes. with this one?
Yes, so this is based on one of Martin's short stories from the 80s. It's about this sorceress named Grey Alice, who will be played by Mila Jovovich, who needs to go out into this post-apocalyptic lost lands wasteland to get a mystical power. And a hunter leads her there. He is played by Dave Bautista. And this is from Paul W.S. Anderson, who did the Resident Evil movies. So it looks like a fun time.
There we are.
Oh, this is fun. Okay. Move aside Game of Thrones coffee cup. We have a new infamous film flub here. So apparently there's a scene in the Squid Game season finale. 2 finale yeah. where you can spot a camera guy in the background during the intense rebellion.
Yeah, funny. With the coffee cup and this, I feel like folk find something like this and they freak out like, this is pretty common. Like, you'll find little mistakes in lots of movies and TV shows. No one would have noticed this if there wasn't the internet and folk were like spreading it around.
Totally.
They might even edit it out now. I'm glad there's a record out there of the camera guy who's in the Squid Game room during the rebellion. And finally, Daniel, Warner Brothers Discovery is rumored to be working on a fourth Dune movie to follow the upcoming Dune Messiah, not to mention another Dune TV series. Dune.
Yes. So this comes from this guy, Daniel RPK, who finds Hollywood rumors, but basically that Warner Brothers is looking ahead to making a fourth Dune. They're already trying to figure out how they would do it. They're thinking about another show after Dune Prophecy. I think this makes sense. Dune Part 2 and Dune Prophecy were both big hits for them. Why not? Start planning early. I support it.
Yeah, especially if they do Children of Dune, which is a good book to be adapted for movies or TV. I know we're talking over the limit, whatever. I know that Denis Villeneuve has said like they get more weird, which they do, but not really.
Book 5. Yeah, or 4.
4 is
yeah.
pretty weird, too. It's Children really of Dune is fairly straightforward. I would like to see Children of Dune. But will we? Tune in next week to find out when we'll definitely have the answer. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST. Or 3 p.m. on the East Coast, noon in California, and 1 for you people up and down mountains. We are also available in podcast form wherever podcasts are available, be it iTunes, YouTube Music, or elsewhere. Give us a like. Please like us. Give us a subscribe. Please subscribe to us. Please ring the bell. And then I know the holidays are over, but if you happen to have any other family gatherings in the near future, just tell your friends about us. What's the worst that can happen? And, well, looking forward to seeing you next week. Week after that, all year, talking about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, occasionally books, maybe even games. And you won't find a more thrilling time anywhere on the internet all of 2025. See you later. Bye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.